Hi there, it's Kath Ann, weekly host of the Homework Help Global's The Learning Studio. This week, we talked group dynamics and how to make your group function smoothly. Tune in to episode 7 for some strategies around how to make that dreaded group project into one that functions well and gets you an A grade. My name is Kathy Boyce, Kath Ann, as I go by on here. And I am the weekly host of Homework Help Global's The Learning Studio. I missed everyone last week. We took a little break. It's starting to get into the busy season, as all of you students probably know. So we took a little break from the stream last week, but we are back live this week. And this week we're going to be talking about one of my favorite topics, which is group dynamics. Hi, Coach Gore. Thanks for joining. So I'm just going to wait and see if anyone else jumps on here to join us. So this week we thought, because it's starting to get into the busy season, midterm season and exam season, it seems like it's been going on for a while, but of course there are also group projects that occur within this time period, and of course group projects are probably one of the most dreaded things that happen in undergraduate and graduate degrees. And that can be because it can be really difficult to work with other people. So I thought that this week it would be really important and maybe interesting to talk about how to make those groups work. Hi, the Neighborly Consultant. Nice to see you again. So I'll just wait and see if anyone, if a couple more people jump on, and then I'll jump into the content for this week. This is one of my favorite topics because I think it's really important to learn how we collaborate and work with other people. And it's really a skill that you can kind of carry throughout your life. It's not something that is specific to university. It's something that you carry into your work, into nonprofit organizations, into being a board member. It's a really good skill to have. And so Coach Core and the Neighborly Consultant, you guys must have some experience working in groups, I'm sure. What's your experience, Coach Core? Good experience, bad experience? What would you, what would be kind of maybe a phrase to sum up your experience working in a group? Coach Core is saying it's frustrating if everyone isn't on the same page. I'm assuming that's what you were going to say. Yes, I agree. It is frustrating if everyone isn't on the same page. So there are some skills that we can kind of work on. I mean, they're definitely not easy to implement, but there are some skills and strategies that we can use to kind of navigate when we are not all on the same page. And I actually just recently went to a session on this very thing, and about how we should avoid groupthink. So that's something that I'll get a little bit more into later on in the session. But this idea that we, because we have a desire so much to maintain kind of harmony and compatibility within the group, we don't challenge each other. And that can actually lead to problems within the group because people are holding back what they actually want to say, and then the group doesn't progress forward and there's no change and no critical thinking happening. So that can be a real issue. But I hear what you're saying when there are people that disagree It can definitely be frustrating, but if there's a facilitator in place to kind of navigate that, that can make a huge difference in group work. And I'm sure you're familiar with that, Coach Cor, as well. Okay, so I guess I'll just jump into some of the content that I wanted to get going this week. So we have another comment from the Neighborly Consultant. Yeah, lots of people don't pull their end of the weight sometimes. And that's absolutely true. And something that is probably one of the main issues, especially in undergraduate and graduate programs. We are all required to do group work. And like I said, it is a beneficial skill to learn, but it can be really frustrating when someone in the group doesn't pull their own weight. And that's something that I'll be covering in this session as well. So I guess let's jump in, because those are two really good points and two things that I'm going to discuss. So the first thing that I wanted to talk about just briefly is, what is group work and why do professors get us to do it in undergraduate and graduate degrees? Of course, group work is a culmination of students that come together in a group to do a project, and I'm sure we're all familiar with that. And we all know that when the professor says, this is going to be a group project, most people in the class become frustrated, because it's definitely not the easiest thing to do. But at the same time, there are reasons that the professor is asking us to do group work. And one of those reasons is because group work is truly a skill that you can carry into your life. It's a professional skill, and a lot of times the professor wants to see how you are going to work with other people and how well you do in kind of navigating the challenges that go along with group work. So if you look at it that way, it can be a really beneficial approach to kind of look at group work as a learning opportunity, a chance for you to grow as a student and as a professional moving into the field, whatever field you choose to go into. Of course, when you're in the throes of a group, it's not necessarily easy to have that kind of overarching perspective, but just kind of tuck that away in the back of your mind that any group that you're a part of, you will learn something from it. And I think that's a really important kind of message to carry forward. I know that it's gotten me through many a group project. And when I was in social work school, it was pretty much all essays and group projects. I was fortunate enough to have kind of a cohort of other students that I worked with. But of course, the professor would often try to challenge us and say, no, you need to work with a group of people that you aren't used to working with. And of course, that presents another level of challenges. But at the same time, it's something to grow from. So, and another benefit of group work is that you can get to know other people and you get to know other people's perspectives. So especially in bigger cities like Toronto, I know a lot of the viewers are from Toronto, there's going to be people who come from all different kinds of backgrounds and speak all kinds of different languages and have a different world view. And I really believe that by working in a group, it can allow you to navigate those differences and try to understand where people are coming from. And it gives you kind of an opportunity to explore different cultures and diversity, because that is reality. Especially if you're living in Canada, we're becoming an increasingly diverse locale, and it's important to know how to work with a variety of people. So that's another reason that group work can be really beneficial in developing your skills to work with all different kinds of people from all different kinds of walks of life and all different approaches on work. Not everyone's going to be a type A personality where they're going to want to take on the bulk of the work, and not everyone is going to be a slacker. Most people are going to be in between. So those are the people that you want to learn how to work with, because those are going to be the people that you work with in your working environment. And another thing that I kind of wanted to mention, I guess this is a little spur of the moment, but I've been thinking about this too lately, and I wanted to share a little bit from my own experience. As I mentioned, I am a social worker by profession, and recently I was actually doing a bit of research around collaborative approaches and strategic approaches in the professional world, so specifically in healthcare. And often, social workers, we come with a certain perspective. So it is very much a social justice, human rights perspective, where we have to kind of be an advocate for people who don't have their voices heard. And it can be difficult to work with, say, doctors and nurses and other healthcare professionals who have a totally different perspective. So doctors have a very treatment-oriented medical perspective, whereas a social worker is coming with a social perspective. So it's really important to learn what your profession brings to the table. And it's also important to learn how to not be silenced in a group and how to speak up. And particularly in my profession, it's important to know, when do I speak up for a client and advocate for them in a space of doctors and nurses? And when do I stay silent? And I don't know if the Neighborly Consultant or Coach Core, if you have any experience with this, because I know that you are both kind of in that area and that field. But I think it's really important to learn how to collaborate and communicate really strategically with other professionals in the field. So I guess I just wanted to kind of put that out there because it's something that I've been thinking about quite often. And I can understand how group work really translates into the real life. And I guess that would kind of give a bit of a concrete example of that. So, So, of course, as I mentioned, there are going to be challenges to working in a group. With diversity and with different perspectives, that can always bring different challenges because, like Coach Kaur said, it's difficult when everyone isn't on the same page. But we can also reframe that and suggest that it can be an opportunity for learning. And yes, I know in reality that is difficult to reframe that, but at the same time, it can really be an opportunity for learning. So, probably one of the biggest challenges is that everyone has a different schedule, and particularly in university and then in the professional world, everyone has different things on the go. And further on into adulthood, it just gets worse because people have families, people have different activities, everyone has their different life going on. It can be really difficult to coordinate scheduling. So that can be a very mundane but practical challenge of being in a group. It's just that everyone's schedule doesn't work together. And that can be really frustrating, believe it or not. And I'm sure you're all familiar with that. And of course, the classic challenge of group work is that there is the one person in the group who chooses not to engage and chooses not to participate or do any work. And I know that we are all familiar with that person and that it can be very, very frustrating to have someone in the group like that. So that is something that I'm specifically going to focus on just a little bit later in the talk. But that can certainly be a challenge when you are trying to work in a group. Another challenge can be group conflict. So that can be, as Coach Core mentioned, everyone's not on the same page. There can be some kind of tension between one group member or the other. Maybe one group member doesn't like the other group member, and that can certainly be challenging. But what I would suggest is that, and this is drawn from a session that I just recently went to, is that it's good to get that conflict out on the table. So often, because we are so driven to avoid conflict or avoid confrontation, we will just be complacent and we will not want to challenge the other group members. But really, what has been suggested, and I can put a reference to this in the comments because the guy's name is slipping my mind right now, but he did a talk and he was explaining that When we don't recognize that conflict, we are actually avoiding a chance for dialogue and avoiding an opportunity to kind of explore the reasons why we are having the conflict. And in turn, we are not working towards change. And I mean, this was specifically in terms of community groups and things like that, but I think it can also apply to a working group in university, because when we avoid kind of addressing those underlying issues, that can result in really problematic group formation. So although there is conflict, I would suggest that we should get it out in the open and discuss it. Unless, you know, there's kind of an extenuating circumstance where it might harm someone to do so, I would suggest that it's important to get those issues out on the table and discuss them and figure out what the problem is, and then address it and move forward. And then another potential conflict within a group scenario is comprehension and understanding. So because we are such a diverse community these days, there may be potentially a language barrier, or there may be someone in the group who does not understand the content of the course. So those are really important things to address at the beginning of the group, because moving forward, you won't be able to understand why that person isn't participating or what the barrier is unless you address it up front. So just kind of being mindful of all of these issues going into a group can help you to avoid potential issues moving forward. So I also wanted to discuss a little bit about group dynamics and how groups form. This might be a little bit dry, but I'll try to kind of speed it up a little bit. But I think it's really important to understand the kind of how groups form. And some people might already be familiar with this because I think it's pretty common to study it in sociology and psychology. But basically, so group dynamics, what I'm referring to there is that group dynamics are the process that occur between group members. And the dynamics are affected by each member's individual perspective that they bring. And they also help you understand how a group kind of forms together. So when a group initially comes together, that's called the forming stage. So we're going to talk about forming, storming, norming, performing, and then closing. So forming, when a group initially forms, it is a series of individuals that come together and form. So with them, they bring their own perspectives, their own beliefs, their own values. So the group is initially forming and they're questioning, who am I and what do I bring to the group? Who in the group do I feel most comfortable with? Why is it important for me to be a part of this group? So even though we might not realize that that is what we're going through when we first join a group, those are all dynamics that happen within the group, and those are all natural processes that we engage in. So then the second phase is storming. And what storming means is us trying to figure out where we do fit. So we might have a bit of conflict and we might try to understand what another person's values are in order to equate that with our own values and why we're in the group. There might be times when one person thinks they're the leader of the group and another person thinks they're the leader of the group, but perhaps one person is more of a natural leader and they might take on the facilitation of the group. But there might be a little bit of conflict there. So that would be involved in the storming phase. And I guess the reason I'm kind of going through this is to help you to understand that these are normal processes and these are things that happen to us as human beings when we are trying to form a group. So then the norming stage is when the group is starting to form a cohesive bond. So they're starting to develop shared values and beliefs and starting to understand what their role is in the group and why they are participating in this group. So they start to develop shared values and shared understandings of why they are engaged. Performing then refers to getting the stuff done that you need to get done. So in terms of an undergraduate degree or a master's degree, when you are in a group, performing might be developing your group presentation and then presenting it to the class. So that would be the process of performing. And then of course, closing and celebration. You have finished your group project, you've gotten an A+, and that is the end of the group and the closing. So that's kind of a very basic breakdown of how groups form and group dynamics. But I think it's really important to kind of understand that process because it gives us a sense of that is how groups form, and that is, they're completely natural processes that we engage in as people. I wanted to talk a little bit about what makes a group function well. So the first thing is group cohesion. And group cohesion refers to what I was discussing earlier, which is understanding the shared values and the intent of the group. So for example, if Coach Core and I were in a group together with the Neighborly Consultant, perhaps we would want to do a project on group dynamics. So we would get together, we'd form our group, and then we would start to discuss what is the intent of our group and what are the shared values that we have towards this group project. So ultimately, if it's just a group project for school, you would likely want to get a good grade, you want to present some valid information, you want to make sure that your project is accurately referenced, and you want to be confident in the information that you're providing to the course, to the class. So those would kind of be all shared values, although we might not spell them out on a piece of paper before we begin, we might. Those would kind of be all things that we would want to carry forward when we're engaging in developing our group. And sometimes I've been in groups before that have written down the actual kind of values that frame a group. So that could be a potential approach to developing group cohesion, to help everyone understand that we are all on the same page and kind of laying the groundwork for the group moving forward. Of course, when you're in a university program, time might not allow for that, especially when you are, you know, swamped with papers and exams and other group projects as well, but it could be a beneficial process in some ways to kind of set those the groundwork before you engage in a group project. So then I think I kind of skipped by this a little bit, but really a really important tenet of group cohesion and making a group work well is developing role identities. So in particular, you will want to identify someone who is going to take the lead in a group. And of course, there might be someone. This is rare because usually there is one person in the group, especially if it's a small group, who is just kind of a natural leader and who will want to take on that lead. But I would suggest that you really identify and target who you want to be the facilitator or the leader of the group, because that will help set the tone for the rest of the group project. And I would suggest using the term facilitator. Especially if someone is good at kind of identifying people's strengths, that can be a really powerful way to make sure that the group runs smoothly, especially if the person has kind of an overall perspective on group dynamics and how the group should function. Identifying a leader is a very important prospect. And you will also want to identify other people who, maybe there's a quieter person in the group who likes to take notes, that could give them a role. So really identifying and breaking down specific roles within the group can help to make the group function really well. So I wanted to tell a quick story about my experience in university, and I remember that there used to be a woman who I went to school with, and she was excellent at picking her groups. She would target people specifically in class. She would watch them as they answered questions, and she really picked out core members of the group who she knew had certain strengths that she wanted to work with. And ultimately, she was the leader in the group because she identified everyone who had strengths that complemented her strengths. So that was a really valuable strategy on her part to form groups, and she always ended up getting an A+. So although you don't have to be as strategic as my friend, fortunately I was able to be in her group, so we always got good grades. But I would suggest that you be somewhat strategic about who you pick in your group, and sometimes it won't be, you won't be able to do that because the prof will say, no, work with people who you never worked with before. And sometimes you might feel bad and you might want to include someone who doesn't always have an opportunity to participate in a strong group. But if you're being strategic and you really care about your grades, I would highly recommend kind of seeking out those people who you think that you can collaborate with if you do have that opportunity. So just, I wanted to give a brief overview of some other kind of, probably some obvious tenets of group work that will make groups function properly, but I just kind of wanted to give a little bit of a list of what, a few suggestions moving forward of what can help you function well in a group. So, of course, active listening. So being attentive to your other group members, not being on your phone. You might even suggest putting phones away during group meetings so that everyone is being really attentive. Because in order to work together in a group, it's really important that you pay attention to each other and to what the other person is saying. Because when they say things, it might not even be that they are suggesting what they're saying. There might be something underlying that. So you really want to be attentive to people's behavior in order to understand what they feel about the group and how their role is playing out in the group. You'll want to establish a common goal, as I mentioned. You'll want to assign roles. Create a timeline. So that is really important. Creating a timeline helps you guide the process. It's just like writing an outline when you're writing a paper. So you'll want to have a breakdown of your goals and when the goals will be due and when you want to have the project finished. That's really important. So also you'll want to divide and conquer. As I mentioned, you're going to want to target everyone's strengths. So this will be an approach that the leader should take on, and to delegate. Maybe someone is really strong in researching. So maybe there are two people in the group who are really strong in researching. So you'll want to delegate those tasks to those people who are really strong with that. And maybe someone is really good at note taking or making PowerPoints. That'll be a job for them. So really harness people's strengths and then divide and conquer so that everyone feels like they have a voice in the group, everyone feels like they have a task that they're strong at and that they're not struggling to do. So that is kind of the crux of group work, is to make sure that everyone is able to do their task and feel confident about it and feel supported by the group. So then I wanted to discuss a little bit about groupthink. I'm just going to take a glass drink of my water here for a second. Sorry, I feel like I'm speaking very fast. So if anyone has any comments or questions, feel free to jump in. Take a little pause for a moment. Okay, so I wanted to discuss groupthink. And groupthink refers to the process through which we are so dedicated to maintaining harmony and cohesion in the group that we almost become afraid of conflict. And so this fear of conflict or this fear of dysfunction almost results in us being unable to make decisions. And this somewhat refers to, board of director meetings or community boards, things like that. I've been in many groups where everyone is so afraid to challenge each other that the group never moves forward. So it's really important to be wary of groupthink and make sure that you're not just agreeing on the basis of not rocking the boat. I'm not suggesting that, everyone is arguing all the time, but if there is some underlying tension, that should be addressed in order to move forward with the group process. Because when those things kind of go unaddressed, then that can lead to problems in the group. And then also people might, if those things are not addressed and it's such a, cohesive, easygoing group, there might be some people in the group who aren't feeling heard. And so it's just good to kind of step back and check yourself and make sure that you're not isolating people or that you're not too afraid to rock the boat that people aren't being heard. And then these are just kind of a few practical things. You're going to want to make sure that you exchange contact information amongst each other so that you're able to contact each other. I really like being able to text my group mates. Some people prefer Facebook, whatever is the most appropriate method of communication. Make sure that you're using that. Book a study space. So make sure that you have an appropriate space where you can all talk and come together. You're not just going to want to be in the hallway at the school. There are lots of rooms that are available for booking in the library. Make sure you make use of those because sometimes you can book them for hours at a time. Just spend a Saturday there and do the whole group project right in that space. And it's best to, in my experience, it's best to use those spaces that are on campus in order to avoid using someone's home because that can be a little bit more distracting. And the study rooms at the universities are usually really beneficial and helpful because they're not full of distractions. That's what they're there for. And then also find out the best means of communication. And by that, I mean like document sharing. So you might want to use Google Docs or you might want to use Dropbox, Trello. There are lots of options out there that you can use. I prefer Google Docs. It's easy for everyone to access. And then another little kind of nitty gritty thing is to make sure that everyone is able to access Google Docs. I know that I've been in groups before where people don't understand how to access the Drive or Google Drive. And then that prevents people from, and they feel embarrassed, and then that prevents them from actually participating in the group. So you really want to make sure that all those kinds of little things are addressed so that you're not assuming that it's someone just not wanting to do the work when it's actually they don't understand the technology that you're using. So it's really important that all of those things are addressed. And then further on that, I wanted to discuss the dreaded non-participant in the group, the person who everyone knows is super frustrating to work with because they don't want to participate and they don't seem to share their weight in the group. And so I wanted to give you a few strategies around how to navigate that. So as I mentioned, this can be navigated or dealt with in a proactive way by giving that person a specific role. So maybe it's not an extensive role. Maybe it is simply to take notes at meetings and provide them to other people. Maybe it is to give a bullet point breakdown of some research they've done. Make sure that you speak with that person and find out what their strength is, and then delegate that role to them. And something else that kind of came up was that this will be the leader's role to take on the delegation of these jobs within the group. So if you are concerned about someone not doing enough work, perhaps you don't realize, but maybe you're the leader and maybe you should take on the role of delegating roles, because that is a really important job to have. And so if there's no one kind of stepping up to the plate in terms of being a leader, perhaps it is you that should take on that role, because groups function a lot more smoothly when they do have kind of a go-to person or a facilitator. So yes, you want to make sure that that person is feeling supported. You want to make sure that they have something to work on. And also make sure, sometimes some people get really overwhelmed in groups. So a group project can seem very overwhelming to some people. And if it's just a lot of information and a lot of talking, it can tend to go over some people's heads. So make sure that they have something very specific to work on and they know what their job is, and that they're feeling supported in that. And then also, you want to address any little issues, as I mentioned. So if they don't know how to use the technology, or if English is not their first language, make sure that you're addressing all of those issues up front, in order to make sure that they're feeling supported and that they can participate in the group. Because a lot of times when people are not participating, it does not necessarily mean that they don't want to or they're being lazy. It could just be a matter of they don't understand what the point of the group is, or they don't understand what the group is working towards. So that would be a really important job of the leader, to kind of take on supporting that person. And then also, this might involve taking that person aside and trying to understand why they're not participating. So if it is a person who just seems like they're being a little bit lazy or they don't want to work, it might be the role of the leader to take them aside and say, hey, you know, what's going on? Why aren't you doing this? And of course, it might be uncomfortable and put you in a strange position. But at the same time, maybe there's something going on at home, or maybe they're super busy, you know, with a full-time job and many other courses, and they just thought they could slide by. So it's really important to kind of address those things up front in order to avoid any underlying tension, because if the other members of the group realize that one person is not pulling their weight, then there is ultimately going to be tension. So again, that's the role of the leader to kind of take them aside and address that. Another really tangible strategy that you can use for addressing this issue is to institute mini deadlines. So sometimes for people, a whole outline or a group project outline can be really daunting. So if you institute mini deadlines, it can help people navigate the goals. So if you have a month to work on a group project, maybe each week there is a small deadline. They have to get a certain amount of work into the leader or the editor of the group. And that can really help to move the work along and give people a little bit more structure, because sometimes an open-ended outline can be just very overwhelming and people need a little bit more framing out of what their task is. So keep that in mind. And then ultimately, if the person does not seem to want to engage and you've tried all of these other strategies like talking to them, issuing them a task, making sure that they understand the content and the approach for the group project, giving them deadlines, then ultimately you may have to email the professor. However, think of emailing the professor as being in a job and going to your supervisor. You're going to want to do this very strategically, because likely the professor has set up this group project in order to see how you will work in a group environment, and that is a part of your grade. So you'll want to be very strategic about when and how you approach the professor. And likely when you do approach the professor, they will say, well, have you tried talking to them? Have you tried giving them a role? Have you tried all of the strategies I listed? So you want to make sure that you've done all of that first. And then, because you don't want to throw your group member under the bus, you might just want to, you know, lightly suggest to the professor that they're not pulling their weight and that you have tried every other strategy, but this group just does not seem to be working. And then hopefully the prof will be able to intervene and support the student to be able to pull their weight. But yes, definitely try all the other strategies first before going to the prof, but there's nothing wrong with going to the professor for a little bit of extra support, particularly in really challenging situations that can't be negotiated with these other strategies I've offered. And then, of course, the other person in the group who is difficult is the know-it-all, or the person who thinks that they have all the answers. And often this will be the person who kind of butts heads with the leader because they think that they should be the leader because they think that they know it all. The same kind of strategies would work for this person, so offering them a really legitimate kind of important role in the group will hopefully appease them and make them feel that they are a valued member of the group. So offering them support in that way is really important as well. And then, as I mentioned, it's really important if you are the leader of the group or the facilitator to initiate dialogue. And if there is a person who is kind of dominating the group but not in really an effective way, maybe ask the other members of the group how they feel about how the group is going. And hopefully the person who is being very dominant will take some perspective from that and understand that maybe they should take a step back and help the group to function appropriately. And then if none of those strategies work, of course you can take them aside and have a discussion with them, same as the non-participant, or speak to the professor. Also, I find that the person who is kind of dominant in the group can put a negative spin on the group very easily. So if you are the facilitator or even a group member, make sure you're staying positive. So group dynamics can go awry really quickly if the group is being a negative and taking on a negative tone. So stay positive in the group, set the tone of positivity and that you're working towards goals, because nothing's gonna function if you're being negative. But that doesn't mean avoiding conflict. So just keep that in mind. Don't avoid conflict. Make sure there's dialogue, but also keep positive. So also understanding, if you are the facilitator or if you're not, understand that there's no value in being the smartest person in the room. Everyone in the group brings different strengths, different perspectives, and it's the strength is in being able to understand that and being able to dialogue with each other. So take strength in the diversity and the different perspectives and go from there. You're not going to be the smartest person in the room, and there is no strength in that. There's no value you're bringing to the table. by trying to be that person. And then one final tip is to make sure you start early. So usually group projects start, you know, they usually give you a month or a month and a half or so to work on them. Make sure you're jumping in and starting right away. Schedule your group meetings, because if there are any issues that come up with the group, that'll give you time to navigate those issues and to form and become a really solid group. And I think that was it. That's all I had this week. So I guess to sum it up, make sure that you're dialoguing. Don't avoid conflict. Keep in mind to play to everyone's strengths. Identify a leader and stay positive. Work towards goals and set deadlines. Group projects can be really beneficial and really enjoyable if you do them right. And there's no reason they should be dreaded. It is difficult to work with other people, and it's a lot easier to work by yourself sometimes. But if a group works well, it can be amazing, and it can actually be a lot of fun. So I hope this was helpful. I know that was a lot of content, but I really hope that this was helpful. I think group work is really engaging and really dynamic, and an important skill to learn. So that's all I have for this week for the Homework Help Global's The Learning Studio. Thank you so much for joining me. And if you want to join us again, we're here on Instagram, we're on Facebook Live. We are also on Twitter, LinkedIn, Google Plus, YouTube, Medium, and then we stream this program on SoundCloud, Anchor, iTunes, Apple Podcast, Google Play Music, and all you have to do is type in Homework Help Global, and you should be able to find us on any of those platforms. Again, we will be streaming live every Tuesday evening at 2 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And I think next week we're going to do another academic focus. But if there are any other suggestions for topics, please feel free to DM us on Instagram or message us on Facebook. You can use the hashtag AskHHG on Twitter and hit us up and let us know what you would like to see on the live stream. I'm really enjoying talking to you guys every week. So let me know, what do you want to talk about? And I hope you have a great week. Have a good night.
The podcast you just heard was recorded with Anchor. If you want to make your own, download the Android or iOS app completely free from anchor.fm/podcast. That's anchor.fm/podcast.